If you're from New York, you can caress the Spanish moss because the bugs won't bite people from New York. Well, I've sure had fun visiting with everybody, and that's one of the reasons this is so exciting, is that mostly we're people that don't know each other, and we're meeting others who, for some reason, decided that this was their time to come, and whatever the motive was, it makes for interesting conversations with the people around you. And I think that's one of the highlights of the weekend, is as you get to know one another and start talking about where you're at and what you're doing. And come Sunday, it's really hard to go home. You've just had this special time with people, and so I can feel it, and I really enjoy it. Now, the lecture for today is the present moment. And if you stop and think about it, if someone asked you to give a talk on the now, the present moment, it might go something like this. Well, you know, the now, like right now, you know, like not in the future, just now. That's what, you know, it's the present moment. You go, okay, well, that's 1 minute. What about the other 59? Well, if you went over there, it would be now over there. And then you come back, it would be now here. Good, now what about the other 58 minutes? And you suddenly realize that, generally speaking, that's it. That ends up being the entire subject of it. And so that's why I got notes. I thought, if it is the most important thing, why is it so hard to find, and why is it so hard to talk about? And so I started with God could and would if he were sought. And the oftenness of seeking and sought in our literature, sought through prayer and meditation, just that sense of seeking. And then as our big book suggests, when we drew near, he disclosed himself to us. Where is near? We all know that sentence, but exactly, precisely, where is that? Where do you go to draw near so that he will disclose himself? And then I went on and wrote, is there a place where people for ages have successfully found God? If so, where is that sacred place? And then here's a little prose. I dream of a place where all dreams end, a place where love, truth, and light were born, a place known as, out of our literature, the land of the ages, God's kingdom, the ultimate reality, or, from the tenth step, the world of the spirit. The ultimate reality or the world of the spirit, a place far away from us in distance and time, a place called right here, right now. I dream of someday awakening and returning to my land of origin, a land known as the now, the eternal present moment, God's only home. So it's easy to use flowery language to describe it, and then you can feel that would be great. But it's still no description with a map on how to get there. It's more or less, yes, part of us can relate that is exactly. And so I went on to think there's a great deal of difference between one day at a time and the present moment. One day at a time is a significant step forward in approaching the now, because we're eliminating everything but today. So we've eliminated all last year's problems and all of that. And we've eliminated, to the best of our ability, the business meeting next. And is the deal going to turn out? And we're just staying in the day. But that doesn't mean we can't spend the morning worrying about the afternoon and the afternoon regretting the morning. We've just shrunk down the load that we're carrying to 4 hours worth instead of 10 years worth, but we're still carrying an unnecessary load. So there is a significant difference between a day at a time and the present moment. Now, religion and science are experts in the past and the future. I mean, the scientists now are down to the billionth of a second after the Big Bang and are explaining every single thing that has happened over a period of whatever it is, 11 billion years. And religion has the history of their particular religion going back thousands of years, maybe even longer. And a scenario of where it all leads and of things that are going to happen. Things that are going to happen. This is the path. This is where we hopefully are going. But none of them really spend too much time in this moment, in this exact moment. And that's where spirituality comes in. That is the specialty of spirituality, is getting us to the moment. So the way I thought of approaching this was the same way that we approach in taking the steps, finding our true selves or the truth about ourselves. We find that by eliminating everything that isn't true, by getting rid of old ideas. In other words, we dismantle, and then what's left or what gets revealed is our true nature. And the same thing could be said about the now. Well, if you want to discover it, we got to get rid of everything that isn't the now, which means we have to get rid of time itself. We have to eliminate time from the equation completely. And when you think about it, time was an arbitrary invention because it's too hard to look at everything all at once. It's too hard to look at 11 billion years all at once. So we break it up into ages, and even in evolution, the Neanderthal period, and you follow, as if there was a beginning and an end to all of these chunks. And it's a very convenient way to measure things. We do the same thing with graphs. We have a very expansive situation, and we attempt to understand it, which is our nature. I got to understand this. You know what I mean? It's just, I got to get my hands around it rather than experience it. And so that's a lot of what that is. And I'll give you a great example of one right in AA. This is a departure from this, but I got involved in this. Every 3 years, New York does a census, or whatever they call it, and your group may receive these. They don't do every group. They do a sampling, and then you mail them back in, and you are basically filling in how many members, how much time, how many people have 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, etc. And at the end of that, they attempt to get a handle on what AA at the present moment is. And about 3 years ago, New York came out with that information, but they also came out with a graph that one of the staff put together at the last minute and added to the package, and it created quite a consternation Because if you looked at it, it looked like it said only 5% of the people that come to AA make it to the first year. That's what it looked like it said, because there was a misunderstanding in the time and the percentage of alcoholics. It formed a circle or a curve that went like that, and it was like 1 month, 50%, 2 months, 30, 20, and then it kept down, and 11 months was 5%. And it went all over. Today AA's recovery rate is so low, we got to go back to the basics when it was 50%. And this chart was the centerpiece of that discussion. And some old-timers did a paper. I got it up here if anybody's interested. It's about 20 pages to disprove all that and to show that the recovery rate's exactly the same. It's really comforting to read that, because we're measuring people who earnestly tried, not who were dropped off by a bus. That's not fair to include them in statistics. Turns out the graph was a snapshot of a group, and they went in and said, how many people in this group right now have 1 month? 10. How many people have 2? How many people have 3? And then how many people have 11? And you add them all up, it added up to 100%. But that sucker went around. It was just, so you can see, when you try and put something that way, it can be difficult to really get a handle on what's going on. One of the things that a lot of authors talk about is the now is the end of the ego. And it is. The ego specializes in stories about the past and the future and causes us to emotionally react to those stories. And then that creates the whole panic or resentment or whatever about all the events. But the second we're in the moment, there's nothing for the ego to do. And that's where the great peace comes from. We seem to be in a hurry to get to the next moment. If you were to stop somebody and just say, where are you going? I'm going to the next moment. Why? Because it's going to be better than this moment. And our whole lives are based on that. Gotta go. Where are you going? I'm going to the next moment. I'm going over there. Why? It's going to be a lot better than this one. And we've never stopped long enough to totally evaluate this moment and to find out that it's impossible for anything to get better than it already is. That's the great news. There's nowhere to go. There's nothing, no goal that you have to obtain. I heard one speaker say, we're already all that we can ever become. Already. We just have to see it. We just have to uncover it. Anyway, here's a story about the past, the present, and the future. And they got together one day and they said, you know, we're always in conflict. We're always tugging at one another. Why don't we hold a meeting, sort of like a peace council, and we'll see if we can come up with some kind of a compromise. And they all agreed. And then they pointed upstairs and they said, you know, that meeting room upstairs, a historic room, a lot of important historical events take place in that room. Why don't we use that room? And they all said, yeah. So the only thing left was the time of the meeting. And the past said, I think we should hold the meeting 2 years ago. We're all familiar with that. It won't be frightening. We know exactly what it is. I think the safest thing, where we'll be the most comfortable, is to go back 2 years ago. And the future said, that would be boring. We already know what that is. I think we should hold it 2 years from now. We don't have a clue what that would be. It'll be a big adventure. It'd be very exciting. It'll be dangerous. It'll be really something. And the now said, well, you guys both make a great case. But if we did go back 2 years ago, when we got there, it would be now. And if we went ahead 2 years when we got there, it would be now. So I think we ought to be now. And the other two couldn't find a flaw in his argument, and they grumblingly agreed to go and sit around the table. And observers pointed out that as they took their seats, there was only one left, and that was the now. And the room got very bright with light due to the absence of the other two players. And I feel that is the wonderful relief of getting rid of everything that isn't the present moment, which is a very heavy burden. And we've told ourselves that we better carry it around, because our fathers told us to carry it around, and our bosses told us to carry it around, and the drill sergeant told me to carry it around. And so we've been carrying it around. In essence, we're giving up everything that we've created. We have created. The I, when we ask each other, well, who are you? The answer to that question is what you created. Well, I'm a father, and I'm a businessman, and I'm a lawyer, and I'm a member of the Rotary, and I'm a this, and I'm a that, and I graduated from Princeton, and I also have a master's from here, and I am, and it goes on and on and on, and I hate Republicans, and I wish we'd start another war, and I wish we would, blah, 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 you know, and you go on and on, and then I don't like this, and I hate my eggs cooked this way, and I mean, you see, this would take probably 2 months to say it all, of who you are, with all of your goals, beliefs, opinions, judgments, the whole thing. So we would have to give up this whole creation. And I think that is spelled out best in the sixth step. We're entirely ready to have God remove, we could substitute the words, my own creation, the real me. Entirely ready. I could rephrase that, entirely ready to move into the now. You could really see the sixth and seventh step as certainly a doorway into this thing that we're trying to get to called the now. And as I go back to when we drew near, he disclosed himself, we're starting to see that drawing near is getting closer to the present moment. Shedding all the things that are attaching us to other places. And as our book says in many places, at that time more will be revealed. And that is, I think what gets revealed is truth about your true self, and your true nature is love, which is the same as seeing God, because that's what God is. So this is sort of the ultimate point of all spirituality, is to get to that moment and to go through the sacrifice of eliminating everything that isn't. Our whole lifetime of effort was spent in creating the reality about ourselves. We created that by thinking it and feeling it and believing it and getting it from other places. I think back on being a child, and my father sat me down, just like your father probably sat you down. He said, son, I want to tell you something. This is your life. Nobody can lead this life for you. It's up to you to lead this life. And if you want to make something out of yourself, nobody else is going to make anything. Nobody's going to do it for you. You have to do it yourself. It's your life. and here's how it's done. And then we had all the lectures. You have to be hard. You have to be honest. You have to go to church. You have to treat people right. And if you get high grades, then you'll get a job. And if you work really hard, they'll get promoted. And, blah, 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 blah. And then you get married. And then you'll get a house. And it was all of this thing. And it's all up to you. I don't know anybody that didn't get that message. And then we come to AA and we go, who was passing that stuff out? Why were they telling us that? Why didn't they say, it's not your life, it's God's life. Just stay out of the way and let him make something out of you. Oh, I don't think that would fly anywhere. Do you follow what I'm saying? Even right now, that's hard to take, isn't it? Get out of the way and let God make something out of you. That leaves you unemployed, without a job. What am I supposed to do? And we find out we're supposed to be an observer, and we're supposed to help others. Chuck talked about doing everything for fun and for free. That was his great saying. Just run around and help people for fun and for free, and God will take care of me. I remember asking him, I said, what about this thing about God takes care of those who take care of themselves? He said, that's wrong. Forget that. That's out. God takes care of those who help. God takes care of those who ask. It was an entirely revolutionary way of looking at it. And when you read a new pair of glasses, you see how he ran his business that way. And he got more business than he... People wouldn't take other bids than his. He was in the supermarket putting together the freezers and layout and all that. And they would just call him up and ask him to do the job and turn in a bill. And other businesses would say, well, why? And it was because when he went that way and just wanted, his only job was to make this guy happy. And on one occasion, the guy changed his mind in the middle and said, actually, I want all the freezers on this side. And so Chuck moved him over there at his own cost and was willing to take a $200,000 loss on the job. And the guy wouldn't let him. Oh, no, you're not going to take a $200,000. I mean, it's like, are you kidding? Why, they'd take advantage of me in a heartbeat. If they ever saw that I was willing to do that. Only they didn't. It was, he just stuck to this, I'll take care of God's kids, and God will take care of me. End of plan. It leaves very little to be done on your own behalf. In recent years, I've came up with a thing for myself. I try not to get too involved in my own life. Now, that's an unusual position to take. And because part of me wants to dwell on problems. There's just an internal thing that was started up in the perpetual motion machine, and I hear it going. You know, you could run out of money too. Yeah. And I go, listen, you got to. That's a great problem, and I think you should work on it. I'm going to the movies, however. And you just keep working on it, and don't wait up for me. Just go ahead. And of course, any time you let go of a problem like that, it starts to resolve or go away. And when you come back from the movies, it's hard to remember what was so exciting about it. And so this fits in. You see what that's doing? It is dismantling the old ideas and go right to the present moment of attending a movie. Look at this. This is where I am. I'm watching this scene. That's great. My whole being is watching the chase scene. How's he going to get out of this? Yeah, more popcorn. Yeah. Do you do anything? Well, I get Coke and popcorn, and that's my... Well, you're a grown-up man. You certainly should be responsible for more than that. No, that's all that stuff is working itself out. All that stuff is working itself out. So I came up against this old argument that I remember starting when I was in college. Is it predestination or free will? Did you ever get involved in that one? Is it predestination or free will? And this is where I am. You can go anywhere you want. Why, it's obviously both. It's obviously both. God's universe unfolds exactly as it's going to unfold. And there's nothing I can do about it. That's exactly what's going to happen. So I guess it's all predestined. No, I have complete control over how I react to it. I can not like it, hate it, love it. And my reaction to it is the world I live in. So my free will created everything in reacting to what was all laid out. And I'm very comfortable with that. I just ended up going, yeah, I created my free will created every reality that I lived in. And spirituality is the freedom to just be an observer. And even if it's your own business problem, part of you can just go, I wonder how this works out. And then intuitively, which is entirely different, answers or waiting come. And they are generally quite superior to when you agonize over it. When you agonize. But there's a great deal of pride in coming up with it on your own. Agonizing and going, that guy is really smart. He came up with that. And we didn't give God a chance. We didn't do what Chuck said. Sit there and wait for guidance. We were impatient. Or we didn't want to give him the credit. Either way, we like to continue to run our own lives. That's all on there. Oh, yeah, in the 11th step in the 12 and 12, we may be granted a glimpse of the ultimate reality, God's kingdom. And here's another attribute of approaching the now. I imagine in this saying, granted a glimpse of the ultimate reality, God's kingdom, that what I see is a door marked the now. And then over the top of the door, it says, beyond belief. So I come up to the door and I knock on it. And they say, who's there? And I go, Sandy B. They said, I'm sorry, you can't come in. Come on back when you figure out the mystery of the now. So now I got to go back and ask my sponsor. What the hell is the answer? What's the correct answer? If you're going to knock on the door of the now to get admitted. So he whispers in my ear and I go, all right, I'll try that, but that doesn't make any sense. So I go back and I go, knock, knock, knock. And they go, who's there? I'm anonymous. I'm the hole in the donut. No one is here. Come on in, the door's unlocked. No one is there. You see, I got rid of me, which is what our spirituality was doing, which was smashing old ideas until I'm left being a servant of God. All of these are the requirements to get in there. Now, in the religious sects, there are orders, especially in the Catholic Church, where people go and spend their whole lives trying to get there. The Jesuits specialize in high learning and the ability to focus on incredibly complex things. And the Franciscans, in the style of St. Francis, do it by having nothing. They live in monastery where they're only allowed to have 2 days' worth of food and minimum clothing. Just that's enough. Maybe one table, one bed. And they beg for all the food in order to feed the poor. And they're totally relying on being supplied on a daily basis. And they're not allowed to have any material possessions. And it's very difficult and austere. But there are great results that come about, just like St. Francis, where as his ego kept diminishing, people wanted to stand near his energy. And we see the pictures where the birds are standing and the animals are coming out. And there was this sense of well-being by simply being near that kind of absence of ego. Now, I don't think anybody in this room is going to join the Franciscans. I don't think I will. So maybe we're going to have to create an order in AA for this. And so I came up with an order that maybe we'd all join, and it's called the Wilsonian Order of the Present Moment. And if those of you that like Bill Wilson, you say, well, maybe I'll join that. What is this? And I say, you get to keep all your stuff. So there you go. I've already got everybody's attention now. You got a Cadillac, you get to keep your Cadillac. You got a boat, you get to... Okay, all right, let me in. All right, you got to take the oath. If you're ready to take the oath, here's the oath. You have to abandon and renounce your own personality, all goals, all causes, all opinions, all fears, all memories of the past, all belief, all hope, all power to choose, all faith, all resentments, all desire to know or understand, all plans for the future. You simply have to let go absolutely. And I can hear the response, what an order, I can't join it. Do not be discouraged. None of us are saints. We're willing to grow. So there was kind of what an oath to get in the now might look like. You can see it's all involved in getting rid of, surrendering everything that isn't the now. I found that it made me see it a lot clearer. Like, yeah, that would take you there. That was the first step. I agreed that that would, in fact, work, that I had just laid out a map of how to get to this mysterious place called the now. I got to let go of a lot of stuff that I think is crucial to my well-being. And so I'll tell you just a couple of phrases. Those who forget the past are free of it. Those who don't plan for the future are free of it. Now, that's not the normal ending to those two things, but I ask you to think about it. Well, if I don't plan for the future, I won't be taken care of. Oh, well, you're not supposed to take care of yourself. You're supposed to trust God to take care of you. Yeah, I'll trust God, but I want $100,000 in the bank, and then I'll be glad to put my hand up. Trust in God. So we have an inordinate trust in money. I don't know anybody who doesn't kind of put your hand back there and go, well, now I can get spiritual. I kind of feel I have a... I have a good foundation. See where it's there? Have you ever looked at the warning label on the money? You didn't see the warning label? In God we trust. Don't trust this money. What are you trusting this money for? There's a warning label right on there. Trust God, not this stuff. Well, I still carry cash. I mean, that's me. I just There's something about having about $200 in 20s that makes me feel more spiritual than I was until I had the $200 in 20s from the ATM. And so how do I even let go of that? You can see the letting go process is the absolute essence of our entire program. You could reduce our entire program to two words, let go. And then all the steps are to find out what you have to let go of. And then even after we find them, as Bill writes in the 12 and 12, though recognized, our defects are still there. And we find out we can't get rid of them, so we have to ask God to do it. That's how tough it is to let go of what's keeping us from the now. We have to humble ourselves and say, I can't even let go of my own character defects. And I have to go ask God to do it. Like, geez. And it's so hard to ask for help. And so then I have some sayings that are related but not completely. And then I got to wrap up on the last page. And these are just sentences with different endings. Do you believe in God? No, I believe in letting go. Now, if you ponder that, that's how you find God. I have to even let go of my belief in God because it's so limited. I have to go beyond my belief in God to contact with God. You have to let go of everything to put your hand out and see if he grabs it. You can't take anything with you, or you're not relying totally on God. Faith is letting go. There is no other need for faith. Faith in anything else doesn't take us to the goal. Letting go does. It takes all the faith you could ever muster to let go of all your beliefs, all your plans, everything that are your traditional ways of navigating through life, your past, everything. Then there's this, this is also part of conscious separation and conscious contact. And it appears in by looking at it this way. This concerns life. There's only life. You're part of it. There's no such thing as your life as a separate thing. It's like a leaf on a tree is part of the tree. It doesn't have a life of its own. It is just like the bark and the roots and all of that. It's all part of the life of the tree. And we sense our separateness by seeing that I have a life and you have a life, and then all of a sudden life is divided into a million parts, just like we were doing with time. There's just life, and we're part of it. And that life is God, and we're part of God. And as we see that we're part of life, then I'm part of you, and you're part of me, and we're all connected. There is no separation. So it is, we have to get rid of our own life. And that's what St. Francis says. It's by dying that one awakens to eternal life. So we get rid of the life that we think is separate. You don't die and go in the ground. You kill the ego life. My friend Hal Marley, he loved this story. There was a discussion meeting going on, and it was about killing the ego. Yeah, you got to get rid of it. You got to smash it. I got to kill my ego. I got to kill. And there's a new guy at the meeting listening to all of this, and someone comes in late. And they ask the new guy, what's the topic? He said, suicide. And that's what this feels like. I'm dying here. I'm dying. And that's good. In other words, that's a good feeling if, in fact, that part of us, which isn't real, is dying. The moment is the door of heaven. And then the last little thing was, you cannot say why anything happened. Just accept that you can't know. And there's a state called not knowing. And that's the best one to be in. I just don't know. In other words, knowing doesn't fix anything. So I go into a very blissful state of not knowing. Then, the whole point of meditation is to cause a sudden change in consciousness. And I never looked at meditation that way. It all has to do with the present moment. And when I do, when I expect it, well, I'm just going to sit until I see things differently. And I really have found that every time I do sit, I end up seeing something different. So if you tuck that away, that is why that is there. And as you see things differently, you have gotten rid of a part of your world and are seeing closer to the present moment. That's what that is, the process that's happening. And in our book, we have a sentence that says, something of great moment is apt to occur. It's in the 12 and 12 somewhere. And I like that phrase because it says something of great moment. And when something of great moment happens, we generally use a term called singular. A singular moment when they invented the printing press. It was a moment in time when the entire world was entirely different than it was before that moment. And when you get to a moment of monstrous proportions, you call it a singularity, such as the Big Bang. It is just enormous. And as you look at a singularity, for example, if we're going to eliminate time, then I will make this statement. The Big Bang is still happening. That's a whole different way of looking at the Big Bang. It didn't happen 15 billion years ago. It's still happening, and we're part of it. And we were part of it then. There's been no matter added to the universe since the Big Bang. It is still happening. It's expanding. These things are forming. Life is appearing. We were manifested out of this. So you can see it's a continuous single moment. It's a whole different way of seeing it. Instead of trying to chop it up in understandable blocks, we simply say it's still happening. So to draw the parallel to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to suggest to you that there may have been a Big Bang that created AA. Now, this is just making up a story, and we could disagree on the Big Bang. People say the Big Bang occurred when Bill looked at Ebby. Other people say, no, the real Big Bang occurred when Bill was pacing the lobby of the Mayflower Hotel. And the thought occurred to him, I better call an alcoholic. And the third one, the one that I choose for my storytelling purposes, is the awakening in Towns Hospital. That was in late November of 1934. And up until that moment, there was no hope for alcoholics anywhere on earth. Up until that moment. And in that moment, there was hope for alcoholics all over the planet forever. That's what came out of that moment. Out of that instant came a complete release from the obsession to drink and a overpowering vision and desire to transmit this awakening to alcoholics all over the world, one alcoholic talking to another. And I would submit to you that that flash didn't just happen in 1934, but it's still happening, and we're part of it. That's a whole different way of looking. It didn't happen in 1934. It's still happening. That's the moment, and we're in it now. See how different that is to look at than, yeah, that was then and this is now. That is what we're part of. We are integral part of that singular moment. And it's happening through us. And it's happening right now. So those are a bunch of stories that are woven in a way to try and explain the unexplainable. It's a map, just like the Big Book is. There are no words to describe the now. There are only words on how to get there. And then the experience of it is yours. You will have that experience. And you probably won't be able to put it into words. But everyone will know that it happened. Just like you know when somebody you're sponsoring gets it. Remember the difference? And they're going, and then suddenly you can see it in their eyes. Hey, maybe these steps do work. You remember that feel? You can just see it. And so the closer someone gets to the now, the more you can see it. Why? Because they had to get rid of all the burden they were carrying. They had to get rid of all the burden that they were carrying. It's one of the great pictures of God that you can have. He's standing there with his arms out, and all he's saying is, give me all of the burdens and the pain that you're carrying, and let me carry them. He's standing right here now. I would like to carry everything for you. And then we just take his hand and trudge the road of happy destiny. It's so simple. It's so wonderful. But I don't really want to do it yet. I want to run a few things myself. I got a few scams I got going. I got a few little things here. So I will almost turn over a lot of this big bag to him, but I got a couple I don't even want him to know about. I got a couple. And so that's why Bill writes in the sixth step, this is the step that separates the men from the boys. The difference between some help and perfect help. And the discussion of perfection occurs in the 12 and 12. Later on, you know, they were trying to put the four absolutes. The whole Midwestern area wanted the four absolutes in our program because they were part of Oxford. As a matter of fact, the Cleveland Intergroup still prints a pamphlet, the four absolutes, and on the back it says AA. And they got some other pamphlets. I mean, that was the real core AA when we got started, the four absolutes. And Bill resisted the four absolutes, because he thought a new alcoholic would go nuts trying to achieve perfection. And in the letter he wrote, I snuck him back in the sixth step in the 12 and 12. And that's where he starts talking about perfection. Having achieved a perfect release from alcoholism. Hey, and then he writes, when you look at that sixth step, we're entirely willing to have God remove all our defects, that's perfection. And so we suddenly went from the Big Book, Progress Not Perfection, to the 12 and 12, Progress Towards Perfection. We had to lift our eyes up to perfection. Does that mean that we can achieve perfection? No, there's no way. No one possibly ever could achieve it. But we could accept perfect help and be there. Because we got a perfect release from alcohol. I haven't thought about it in 43 years. I have a perfect release from alcohol. And the mystery, as he writes in the sixth step, why don't I have a perfect release from pride, greed, lust, envy, gluttony? Why don't I have perfect release from those? I don't want perfect release. I want a little progress. I want to get rid of most of my lust. I want to get rid of most of my greed. I want to get rid of most. Give me 85%, 70, 80, 90. The only help that's available is perfect help. God will not help us to achieve half measures. We have to achieve those on our own. So the struggle, the whole thing we've been talking about, is getting to a comfort level that's here and wanting to go further. And there's just different ways of looking at it. And getting to the now is another way of describing perfection. Gentlemen, that's my best shot at this particular topic. So we're going to stop now and sit around and talk or do whatever we want. But thank you all for your attention.